The Night King and Jon Snow have been circling each other like two wary wolves for several seasons now, snapping at their heels, but no one really going for the kill. Well, not yet. In my theory, A Killing of a Ranger, the death of Waymar Royce, I argue that the reason for Waymar Royce's death in the opening prologue was because he was not Jon Snow. I left open the question though, what would have happened if it was Jon raising his sword and telling the White Walkers to dance with him? Now, I think I know how the White Walkers and Jon Snow's final dance will play out. Jon will walk into the jaws of death just like Waymar Royce and challenge them to fight in the old way. Just a brief refresher on the scene with Waymar. The White Walkers ambushed Waymar in the Haunted Forest and subjected him to a series of tests to see if he was the one that they wanted. They analyzed his appearance, his clothing, his sword, his skill with that sword, and finally if he was undead or not. When they realized he was not a Stark-looking undead master swordsman with Valyrian steel, they as one slaughtered Royce and laughed at the dying man. What really happened though is that Waymar didn't just lose a fight, he lost an ancient competition known as the Old Way. What inspired this follow-up theory is a series of articles and publicity that have come out in the lead-up to Season 8. In an article from Entertainment Weekly, reporter James Hibbard wrote this in the middle of his question and answers with showrunners D.B. Weiss and Dave Benioff. Author George R.R. Martin, whose series of novels forms the basis for Thrones, had revealed to the duo the broad strokes of how his Song of Ice and Fire saga secretly ends, including a description of an epic final battle that's been teased from the show's very first scene. For someone like me who has spent, honestly, probably way too much time focusing on Waymar's death, this lit my imagination on fire. Maybe it won't just be an interesting footnote telling us exactly how long Jon Snow has been targeted by the White Walkers. However, that writing isn't a direct quote as far as I can tell, so my hype was slightly slayed. It's unclear whether this is something Hibbard is paraphrasing or his own analysis. That was until another Entertainment Weekly interview came out, this time with Night King actor Vladimir Furtick, where he said,
"People will see he has a target he wants to kill, and you will find out who that is. There's also the moment in Hardhome when Jon Snow was on a boat and the Night King looked at him and raised his arms. There's a similar and even stronger moment between Jon and the Night King this time."
The duel of the White Walker and Jon Snow at Hardhome is one that is almost an exact mirror of the fight between Waymar Royce and the White Walkers in the prologue. Both men of the Night's Watch take on an enemy they have little hope of defeating and are losing badly to a more skilled opponent and outnumbered. However, Jon is saved by his Valyrian steel sword, which allows him to deflect attacks and land the death blow that Waymar Royce never could. So when Furtick says the Hardhome sequence is coming back and even stronger than before, I looked around and found this idea of the Old Way. Upon investigation, I found this concept layered heavily and consistently throughout the show and books. The Old Way is first introduced to us in the show in the aftermath of the Battle of the Whispering Wood. Robb Stark was caught between two fully armed Lannister armies, with Jaime Lannister laying siege to the Tully stronghold of Riverrun. Robb devised a strategy where he allowed a captured scout to relay information back to Tywin Lannister that all the Northern army was marching on Tywin, but instead sent ahead only a token force. Robb's main army instead ambushed Jaime Lannister and routed them, taking Jaime himself hostage. When Robb presents the captured line to his mother, Jaime makes a last-ditch effort to save himself and end the war.
"We could end this war right now, boy. Save thousands of lives. You fight for the Starks, I fight for the Lannisters. Swords, lances, teeth, nails, choose your weapons. And let's end this here and now."
Jaime is offering a challenge to Robb, a one-on-one combat to avoid the rest of the war. This also isn't something Jaime made up. All those in attendance freeze at Jaime invoking the challenge and wait for what Robb will do. Robb thinks and responds,
"If we do it your way, Kingslayer, you'd win. We're not doing it your way."
In the books, the same challenge is lobbed back at Jaime Lannister by Brynden Blackfish Tully during the Siege of Riverrun.
"There is a quicker way to decide the matter. A single combat. My champion against yours. I was wondering when you would get to that," Sir Brynden laughed. "Who will it be? Strongbore? Adam Marbrand? Black Walder Frey?" He leaned forward. "Why not you and me, sir?" That would have been a sweet fight once, Jaime thought. Fine fodder for the singers. When Lady Catelyn freed me, she made me swear not to take arms against the Starks or Tullys. A most convenient oath, sir."
A quick aside, single combat and the Old Way are the same things basically used interchangeably. A particularly choice example of this from the books is between Sir Courtney Penrose and Stannis Baratheon. Stannis is trying to get Courtney to lay down his arms and surrender Storm's End, so that Stannis and Renly's combined army can move on to King's Landing as well as secure Edric Storm, King Robert's bastard son. Penrose is unwilling, to say the least, in particular because he was charged with protecting Edric, and then challenges Stannis. This dialogue is probably what inspired the show version of the scene between Jaime and Rob.
"I have heard your proposal, Lord Stannis. Now here is mine." He pulled off his glove and flung it full in the king's face. "Single combat, sword, lance, or any weapon you care to name. Or if you fear to hazard your magic sword and royal skin against an old man, name you a champion, and I shall do the same." "Do you take me for an utter fool, sir?" asked Stannis. "I have 20,000 men. You are besieged by land and sea. Why would I choose single combat when my eventual victory is certain?"
If this idea sounds familiar, it should. This is more or less the idea behind trial by combat in Andal culture, where two combatants fight to the death to settle some kind of disagreement. For High Lords, though, there's usually a champion standing in, like Oberyn Martell, who fought for Tyrion, and Gregor Clegane, who fought for the crown. There's nothing really stopping a High Lord from taking part personally. Lord Lionel Baratheon, the Laughing Storm, rose up in rebellion against King Aegon V over the Crown Prince Duncan the Small, spurning Lord Lionel's daughter, Virginia of Oldstones. Rather than using a champion, though, Lionel fought personally against the Lord Commander of the King's Guard, Duncan the Tall, and lost, ending his rebellion. And there are numerous other examples in the books, like the fight between Oris Baratheon and Argilac Durantan, Ser Barristan Selmy and Maelys the Monstrous Blackfyre, and Ser Duncan the Tall again, with Ser Lucas Longinch. Although the idea of the old way in single combat is thought to be an exclusively Andal tradition, you can actually see the roots of this idea in House Stark, particularly Ned Stark. Ned tells Bran Stark in the very first chapter of the book,
"The man who passes the sentence should swing the sword. If you take a man's life, you owe it to him to look him in the eyes and hear his final words. If you cannot bear to do that, then perhaps the man does not deserve to die."
This quote is talking in particular about how first men don't use executioners or champions to do their killing for them, meaning that, in effect, the first men expose themselves to these one-on-one moments of justice. Many past Stark lords are noted as being incredible fighters, like Cregan Stark and Brandon Stark, and Brandon of the Bloody Blade, and this may very well be more than just being good battle. They are expected to personally carry out justice, which in some cases may involve duels. A historical example of this is the story of how the Starks won Bear Island, the current home of House Mormont. According to legend, King Roderick Stark, after centuries of battle with the Ironborn and Greyjoys for the island, challenged them to a wrestling match for dominion of the island. King Roderick won this contest, and then granted the lands to House Mormont for all time. The conversations I previously highlighted show a problem with the tradition, though. The old way is a way of deciding conflicts that is extremely easily manipulated, and very rarely taken up by High Lords and Kings. Often the person offering the challenge is in a losing position and is using it as a last-ditch effort, which we can see repeated here before the Battle of the Bastards, as Jon Snow challenges Ramsay Bolton personally.
"There's no need for a battle. Thousands of men don't need to die. Only one of us. Let's end this the old way. You against me."
"I don't know if I'd beat you, but I know that my army will beat yours."
The advantage party here, Ramsay has little reason to accept, and the outcome is typical. However, by looking at the challenges of the old way that are accepted, we can get a picture for how it's become relevant in Game of Thrones Season 8. As mentioned in my opening, the very first instance of this appears to be between Waymar Royce and the White Walkers in the prologue of the books. And side note, the opening scene for the TV show was changed from that duel, as they had to shoot two pilots and didn't have the first Waymar actor available for the reshoots. Besides the point, in this scene, Ser Waymar utters his line.
"Sir Waymar met him bravely. Dance with me, then." He lifted his sword high over his head, defiant. His hands trembled from the weight of it, or perhaps from the cold. Yet in that moment, Will thought, he was a boy no longer, but a man of the Night's Watch.
And effectively challenges the White Walker. Let's look again, though, at the circumstances here. Waymar is outnumbered and overmatched in every way. There's six more White Walkers hiding in the trees watching the two combatants. There's also all the risen wights that have been used as a lure for Waymar, and however many more those White Walkers control. And yet, in reversal of what we see from Ramsay, Stannis, and Robb, the White Walker accepts and duels Waymar. Why? I speculated in my original theory that this has to do with the White Walkers believing that they have found a prophesized hero of destiny in this moment, which they quickly realize is incorrect as they cut down the young Royce. What this establishes, though, is a reason that someone may accept a challenge of the old way. They have a very strong personal reason to do so that overwhelms their tactical advantage. There's some goal or need they're fulfilling by taking the risk of fighting a duel that they don't need to, which we saw from the White Walkers. And again, we see much the same for the combat between Lord Lynel Baratheon and Sir Duncan the Tall. Lord Lynel was leading his small rebellion, but due to his immense size, strength, and skill in arms, he likely figured he would not actually win his cause in the field, but he might be able to win in a one-on-one combat scenario. And in a surprise to all, King Aegon V and Sir Duncan accepted the challenge. Although we're not really given the reason why Aeg agreed, it can be certain that he saw the promise of a quick end to the rebels as a major upside with the Blackfyres looming in Essos. He took his chances to defeat an opponent he should turn down because it meant he wouldn't lose the next war waiting across the Narrow Sea. And the most relevant example, a reversal of the Battle of the Bastards Old Way challenge. After being routed by the Ride of the Rohirrim, the Vale Knights, and the Northern Army bearing down on Winterfell, Ramsay faces Jon inside the walls and finally accepts Jon's challenge from before the battle.
You suggested one-on-one combat, didn't you? I've reconsidered. I think that sounds like a wonderful idea.
In this situation, Jon should not accept. His forces and allies have won the day and broken down the gates to Winterfell. Victory is basically assured right now for House Stark. And yet, Jon goes through with his duel. Why would Jon do this when so many would not? Well, he has a personal grievance with Ramsay. Ramsay had done horrible things to Sansa Stark, Winterfell, its inhabitants, and most recently slayed Rickon Stark by arrow right in front of Jon. The dragon-like rage in Jon blinded him from reason and made him put himself at risk to personally inflict as much pain as possible. And this may be where the end of Game of Thrones may come in, as the Night's King and Jon had been dancing around the same concept since Hardhome. Jon faced a White Walker in the old way at Hardhome, and won mostly thanks to Longclaw. Yet then something very interesting happens. We can see that not only was the Night King watching the fight from his perch on the cliff, he looks concerned at what he sees, and then he lets Jon go. Rather than instantly commanding all his forces to close in on and slay Jon where he stands, instead the Night King does his flexing routine, and Jon sails away with a classic brooding look. It's also noted in the White Heist episode that Whites can in fact move underwater, yet here are being restrained on the shore. And from his perch on the cliff, the Night King could have used his incredible skills at javelin throwing to probably kill Jon at any time. Jon was, in no uncertain terms, let go by the Night King. Why would he do that? For one thing, Jon did win his duel with the White Walker, and perhaps this is something very important for their kind. They do take the duel with Waymar seriously, just stoically watching. Perhaps if Waymar had won, much the same would have happened and Royce would have been allowed to walk free. Although a problem with this is that after Hardhome, Jon again challenges the Night King to the old way, after the death of Viserion seen here. This time, the Night King even has his spears at the ready for Dragonslaying. Jon is offering an old way challenge to the Night King, and it is declined. Although Jon is wielding Valyrian steel again, this really shouldn't be a deterrent. Again, the Night King has his massive army of Whites that could overwhelm the group really at any time. And he actually has the ice spears in his hands. And again, he could just throw more ice spears until he skewers the King in the North. There are endless possibilities for killing Jon on the table, and the Night King again turns them all down. Although killing Jon would provide a great tactical advantage by removing one of the key leaders of the White Walker's opponents, after Hardhome, they are entirely uninterested. Perhaps by being the person they are looking for, maybe their version of the great prophesized enemy or the White Walker Azor Ahai, Jon has been marked by the Night King as very special and not to be touched. There is a few things that Jon offers that few characters do. For one thing, we know from very early on in the series that the White Walkers cannot reproduce on their own, and need Craster's children to create more of their kind. It's Unclear why Craster in particular was chosen. It may come down to some kind of special mix of genetics that he and his wives have. Perhaps why he engages in such extreme incest. Or maybe he's just the only prick north of the wall ready to welcome a wintry apocalypse. If it's somehow tied to genetics though, then Jon, the Stark and secret Targaryen, is not only a skin changer with Ghost, but also a dragon rider. These traits could make him a particularly valuable magical body for the White Walkers to take and turn into their own, or he may be a fulfillment of some sort of promise or blood oath. The special blood idea gets back to the idea of the prince that was promised as a concept. It's almost certain that before Craster, the Northerners regularly gave up children to the Walkers as these sort of promise sacrifices. The book Night King did just that, and under the Nightfort there is a secret passage known as the Black Gate, which would be very convenient for bringing secret sacrifices through to the Walkers. In the book series Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn by Tad Williams, major spoilers for this book series, so if you don't want to know what happens, skip ahead about 20 seconds. A key plot point is the idea that, as a part of a pact, a prince was promised to the White Walker analogs as a human sacrificed and never delivered. Given that Memory, Sorrow, and Thorn is one of Martin's absolute favorite book series and a major influence on his work, this could be Jon's fate as well. Perhaps they don't want Jon dead just yet. They want to raise him into their own like they did Viserion, or maybe install him as the Night King's new body. Although, if that's just what they wanted from him, they could have surrounded him and took him long ago. It appears the White Walkers are waiting for some trigger in Jon's life before they make their move on him. And getting back to Craster, it may be they're waiting for Jon to have a child. All the books and TV show, the White Walkers only want four things, and that's it. They want Craster and Gilly's son, they want to surround and duel Waymar Royce, personally kill Bloodraven, and perhaps Bran, and then raising Viserion as a White Walker dragon. After Viserion's death, Jon and Dany started their relationship and made the old dragon with two backs, so it may very well be a child of Jon Snow and Daenerys Targaryen that the White Walkers want and were waiting for. And using that may be how Jon and Bran can find a way to defeat the White Walkers at their own game. I mentioned the Battle of Whispering Wood earlier, and a key part of that battle is that Robb Stark lost one battle in order to win a different one. He sent a small part of his army to be slaughtered at the hands of Tywin in order to destroy Jaime's by surprise. Jaime did much the same in Season 7 when he left Casterly Rock completely undefended so that he could march into the Reach, sack Highgarden, breaking the back of Dany's alliance with the Tyrells, and giving Tyrion a hollow victory. He even mentions in that scene that his decision was inspired by being humiliated previously by Robb Stark.
And you took your army, your real army, and went where they weren't.
As Robb Stark did to me at Whispering Wood. There are always lessons in failures.
Yes. You must be very wise by now.
This may be exactly what Bran has planned for the upcoming episodes. The Defenders cannot defeat the White Walkers and their undead forces by strength of arms, especially since the Walkers control a dragon now too. Winterfell may stand as an analog to the Battle of the Green Fork, Casterly Rock, a battle the humans must lose in order to find another way of breaking the Walkers' forces. In episode 2, he says as much that he will go to the Godswood and await the Night King find him as bait for an ambush. Although unfortunately, due to the laws of television, because Bran said that plan out loud, it won't work, so we can expect something different to happen. The roots of this idea are present as a major set piece in Lord of the Rings, another one of George's very, very favorite series, and a huge influence on Game of Thrones. Following the defeat of Sauron's forces at Pelennor Fields, Aragorn and his advisors face a massive problem. Sauron still lives behind his walls, and Frodo is somewhere lost in Mordor with the Ring of Power. With Sauron's eye fixed inside his own lands again, Frodo's chances of being caught are almost a certainty, and the forces of Middle-earth may have won a battle but lose the war if Sauron gets his Ring of Power back. So Aragorn comes up with a strategy, gives Sauron what he wants.
There's still hope for Frodo. He needs time and safe passage across the plains of Gorgoroth. We can give him that.
How?
Draw out Sauron's armies. Empty his lands. Then we gather our full strength and march on the Black Gate.
We cannot achieve victory through strength of arms.
Not for ourselves. But we can give Frodo his chance if we keep Sauron's eye fixed upon us. Keep him blind to all else that moves.
Aragorn then goes and finds the Palantir, or Seeing Stone, and shows Sauron that Aragorn has the very sword Narsil that destroyed his body, taunting the Dark God of Mordor and his failures to catch and kill the heirs of Isildur.
Long have you hunted me. Long have I eluded you. No. Behold the sword of Elendil.
Gorn then raises his royal standard, takes everyone left in his command, and marches on the Black Gate with Narsil in hand. Gandalf tells Aragorn that it will not work, that Sauron will suspect a trap. Aragorn knows better though, that although Sauron desperately wants the ring and his power back, he has felt an enormous anger that has blinded him from all reason for years. Sauron couldn't resist emptying his forces to embarrass Aragorn and his allies once and for all. And we get back to the White Walkers, in a similar way to Sauron, they are not the cold, emotionless demons they seem to be. There's a hint of pleasure and satisfaction when the Night King personally cuts down Bloodraven in his cave. The desecration of the spiral symbol of the Children of the Forest with body parts, as I discussed here in my video, is something that shows the true anger of the Night King. When he raised the dead at Hardhome while staring at Jon with his cold star eyes, there's satisfaction behind rubbing Jon's failure to save the wildlings in his face. He seemingly cannot speak, yet his actions speak loudly at the anger and pride behind his eyes. What this tells us is while the Night King is normally cautious and methodical, he's also vengeful, vain, and greedy, and those are his weaknesses, where he can be attacked. Vladimir Furtick says the Night King wants revenge for what was done to him, that there is someone he wants to kill. In episode 2, Bran says that the Night King desperately wants to kill him personally and use that to wipe out all memory of life. His actions tell us that he also very much wants children and this kind of total victory. His desecration of the children's spirals tell us that he wants to dominate and humiliate his opponents. Give him those things just like Sauron. Give him his revenge. Give him who he wants to kill. Hand over the children he wants. Let him win battles. Allow yourself to be humiliated and appear completely defeated. And then, exactly like he did at Hardhome, where he had to show off for Jon, or in Bloodraven's cave, where he personally had to swing the sword, he will step out from behind his army and minions. He can't stop himself. And that's where he's vulnerable. And all of those things Jon Snow can offer. He can offer the Night King his own body, the Child of Fire and Ice, the chance to embarrass the leaders of his enemies. And if it's revealed that Daenerys is actually pregnant this season, perhaps the Child of Destiny to fulfill a long-forgotten pact in place of Craster's children. Jon can lose battles, his gods, his home, those he loves most, and give the Night King what he wants, a chance at total victory. Remember that the White Walkers dueled Waymar rather than killing him outright. The Night King has multiple times let Jon escape from what should be certain death. They are waiting for something from Jon, and Jon needs to force that issue to draw the Night King's gaze. A key part, remember, of the idea of fighting somebody in this old way, and the same example we got from Aragorn, is that the one with the advantage would be stupid to take the challenge, and the Night King would be stupid to engage in a sword fight with Jon Snow, even if he doesn't have Longclaw or Rhaegal. And yet Jon must find a way to make the Night King face him, no matter the cost. It may be the only chance they get to strike at him. That Jon has been set up for this role has been heavily foreshadowed as well through his father figures and mentors. Maester Aemon posed this exact question to Jon as well in his own poetic way.
Love is the bane of honor, the death of duty. What is honor compared to a woman's love? What is duty against the feel of a newborn son in your arms, or the memory of a brother's smile? Wind and words, we are only human, and the gods have fashioned us for love. That is our great glory and our great tragedy. The old man seemed to sense his doubts. Tell me, Jon, if the day should ever come when your lord father must needs choose between honor on the one hand and those he loves on the other, what would he do? Jon hesitated. He wanted to say that Lord Eddard would never dishonor himself, not even for love. Yet inside, a small, sly voice whispered, he fathered a bastard. Where was the honor in that? And your mother, what of his duty to her? He will not even say her name. He would do whatever was right, he said ringingly, to make up for his hesitation. No matter what, a craven can be as brave as any man when there is nothing to fear. And we all do our duty when there is no cost to it. How easy it seems, then, to walk the path of honor. Yet, sooner or later, in every man's life, comes a day when it is not easy, a day when he must choose. Some of the ravens were still eating, long, stringy bits of meat dangling from their beaks. The rest seemed to be watching him. John could feel the weight of all those tiny black eyes. "And this is my day, is that what you're saying?" The old man laid a withered, spotted hand on his shoulder. "It hurts, boy," he said softly. "Oh yes, choosing. It has always hurt, and always will. I know."
You know what Lord Stark would do when thrust into the situation of choosing between what is right or the ones he loves. Varys had him live this exact scenario.
"Cersei knows you as a man of honor. If you give her the peace she needs and promise to carry her secret to your grave, I believe she will allow you to take the Black and live out your days on the Wall with your brother and your bastard son."
"You think my life is some precious thing to me? That I would trade my honor for a few more years of woe. I learned how to die a long time ago."
"Pity. Such a pity.
What of your daughter's life, my lord? Is that a precious thing to you?"
Substitute Sansa, Arya, Daenerys, Sam, all those that Jon holds dear into that scenario with Ned, and it's pretty clear how Ned Stark would act if it came down to his own life and those he loves. No hesitation, he offers up his own honor and pride to protect them from harm, even though it eventually means his head being cut off with his own sword and the destruction of his honor. J.R. Mormont puts the same question to Jon again after learning that in the night, Jon had attempted desertion to be by Robb Stark's side as the North rode against the South.
"Do you think your brother's war is more important than ours?"
"No."
"When dead men and worse come hunting for us in the night, do you think it matters who sits on the Iron Throne?"
"No."
"Good."
Jon is getting a crash course in Aragorn's choice. The value of doing what is right and honorable versus what his heart wants. The duel with Corrin Halfhand was a sharp lesson of that as well, when Corrin forced Jon to kill him so he could infiltrate the Wildling army and have a chance at stopping them and killing Mance Rayder. Or when Alistair Thorne insisted that Jon go meet with Mance on a suicide mission to kill him at all costs. I'm proposing that these situations are very much an allegory for what we'll see happen with Jon and the Night King, that Jon must be brave, as Ned Stark once told Bran.
"What do you think?" his father asked. Bran thought about it. "Can a man still be brave if he's afraid?" "That is the only time a man can be brave," his father told him.
Much like Aragorn, Jon must walk into a trap that he knows is certain death for him, because although his life and crown are not precious things to him, his family is. He's learned from facing Corrin the value of sacrifice for a greater goal. He's learned from Ramsay how to goad an opponent into a fight they don't want. He's learned from Lord Commander Mormont that no personal war is more important than all of humanity. He's learned from Maester Aemon the value of choice and duty, that no one will make it for him. And he's learned from Ned to be brave when he's afraid, and to do what is right no matter what. And so, I believe that Jon will walk right into the clutches of the Night King and do whatever it takes for the Night King to take his challenge to fight in the old way, much like Robb Stark did to Tywin Lannister and Sansa Stark did to Ramsay Bolton, making victory for the Night King look assured and total before the trap is sprung. Throw down his Valyrian steel sword for common steel, abandon his walls, send away his direwolf and dragon, put his own life and much more on the line. Not because Jon expects to win his fight and live, but because it's the only hope to draw the eye of his enemy towards him, as Bran, Sam, Arya, and Tyrion work for whatever victory they can out of sight of the burning blue eyes. Jon's surrounded by an army of whites and white walkers, standing between the god of death and those he loves most, giving the Night King what he wants, the chance at a crushing defeat, to humiliate those who have done him wrong in one strike, and maybe even the prince that was promised. No dragons or walls between them, no chance, and no choice. To be the sword in the darkness, the fire that burns against the cold, the light that brings the dawn, the horn that wakes the sleepers, and the shield that guards the realms of men, just like his father would have done, and Waymar did in the prologue, like Aragorn charging into Sauron's Black Gate for Frodo. And then Jon raises his sword.
"Sir Waymar met him bravely. Dance with me then." He lifted his sword high over his head, defiant. His hands trembled from the weight of it, or perhaps from the cold. Yet in that moment, Will thought, he was a boy no longer, but a man of the Night's Watch.
And that has been part two of my theory, A Killing of a Ranger. It has taken quite a long time to get from the prologue and Waymar voice all the way here to John in the end of the show. I really hope you enjoyed my take on what it means to fight in the old way and how this may be the end of Jon Snow's song. For upcoming content, I will be on Indie Geek's pre-show live stream on Sunday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and then right after the episode, I'll be going live here on my channel with Gray Area. Links for all that will be in the description. If you like this content and want to see more, consider supporting me at patreon.com/joemagician, where you can get access to videos and audio early, the artwork from these videos customized however you would like, special maester-themed nicknames, your name read out at the end of videos, and more. And speaking of, let's thank those fine people. To my brown wizard patron, Mr. Skillen, to my blue wizard, Pandora177, and my archmaester patrons, Nessie the Questing Beast, June the Healer, V, the Archmaester of Nothing, Brendan Beefish, KCD, Johan, Nauticast, Sanrixian, Steven Stark, Lady Shar, and Zombie Jesus. Also, make sure you do all the normal YouTube things like subscribe, comment, share, hit that bell button for notifications, and slam that like button. If you want more content from me, you can also find me at Watchers on the Wall, where I'm a feature writer, and the Maester Monthly Podcast, where I am a co-host, as well as the r/A Song of Ice and Fire subreddit, where I am a moderator. Thank you very much for watching.